This is the Manga Mavericks Podcast, episode 239. We are a podcast not only dedicated to talking about manga as a medium, but as an industry. I'm Colton, and this is kind of a weird episode. I'm not going to lie. For many reasons. First off, I guess I'll say I sincerely apologize for the lack of output on our end. Part of that is because I've been kind of dealing with some slight burnout over the show lately, and I hope that doesn't come off like I'm going to stop doing the show anytime soon. I don't want it to come off that dramatic or anything. I have just gotten kind of tired of constantly keeping up with news and simulpubs and trying to get those episodes out in particular when those podcasts that we record do kind of have a shelf life, and I just genuinely have not had as much time as I would like to work on those. And also, we have so many things that we've recorded that are kind of on our backlog that we really need to focus on. So that's also a big reason why we haven't really recorded any new news or Simulpubs episodes lately. So again, if you enjoy those episodes, I do sincerely apologize, but I personally do need to kind of take a break from those. I'm just not really in a headspace to do those types of episodes right now. I really want to focus on getting out our other stuff, such as our Oron podcast that I still need to work on, and we recorded a 20th Century Boys episode that I still need to work on. I know Lum has a bunch of other stuff that they haven't really had the chance to work on that I will probably end up working on. We'll see how that goes. Again, I don't want to spend too much time on this. I just wanted to be transparent about why we haven't had the chance to put out a whole lot lately. I've also been working on our Shonen Jump retrospective that we recorded with Maxi last month. Good podcast. Again, I am also sincerely sorry that that's not out yet. A big reason for that is because for longtime listeners, you know that those podcasts in particular end up running very, very long because we always have a lot to talk about. So I have been working on that, but I haven't had as much time to work on as much of it as I want to. But I am working on that, and that should hopefully be out within like the next week, week and a half, week and change. It'll be out soon. I am working on that. I'm about like halfway through on it now, so I genuinely am making progress on that. I will say that for the past 24 hours or so, like nearly 24 hours, I have not really felt like working on the show. And that is because at about 9 o'clock Central Time over here in North America was when news broke out that creator of Dragon Ball, along with so many other manga, as well as contributor to such video games as Chrono Trigger and the Dragon Quest franchise, Akira Toriyama, has passed away at the age of 68 on March 1st, 2024. This was announced a week after, I'm assuming so that the family of Toriyama could have their time to grieve and have their services, which obviously I do respect. So I know for them, they've kind of gotten to have time to grieve and really reflect on their loss. Unfortunately for myself and the rest of the world, this news is still very, very fresh. I won't lie. I very rarely get this upset about the death of someone that I did not know personally in any way, shape, or form. But I've genuinely been sobbing like on and off throughout like the past day, ever since I heard this news. It feels like everybody in the entire world is just as broken up about this as I am. I feel like, what was it? I saw a tweet online that said something along the lines of everybody coming together to mourn the loss of Toriyama is the closest thing to world peace I've ever seen, which I know that sounds like hyperbole, but it's true. Another thing that's going to sound like hyperbole is that Toriyama, in case you haven't been online in the past 24 hours, you know, so sometimes people do point out about how like, oh, well, if it weren't for Toriyama, this thing wouldn't have been made this way, or, oh, we wouldn't have like the poop emoji without him, or, oh, you know, the people who created Mario and Sonic were really inspired by Dragon Ball and Dr. Slump. And, you know, those are really cool tidbits to hear every once in a while, like, oh, yeah, wow, he's really influential. I don't think I really, like, fully 100% understood how influential and how important Toriyama was to pop culture until right after we found out that he passed away. Like, for years and years and years, You know, basically kind of ever since we started up Manga Mavericks and we started talking about his works and spending innumerable amounts of time, hours and hours and hours talking about his works. For longtime listeners, Toriyama is genuinely one of mine and Lum's favorite mangaka of all time. We love his work so much. It's never really hit me as much as it has, you know, throughout the past 24 hours that, wow, everybody was inspired by Toriyama at some point in their life. Even if you weren't a Dragon Ball fan, even if you only maybe kind of like saw a couple episodes on Toonami as kids and then you just kind of like grew out of it, like this man inspired, it feels like everybody on the planet Earth. And again, that sounds like hyperbole, but I kind of think it's true. I feel like there has to be some truth to that. And I don't want to spend too much time eulogizing Toriyama. Sakaki and I might do a short thing getting out our feelings on Another Day, Another Adventure. But in case you can't tell, I'm still reeling from this news. I've been crying on and off. I've been really reflecting on, along with everybody else on the internet, reflecting on just how much Toriyama and his work and his existence really meant to us as people, as far as all of humanity goes, not just Japanese pop culture, but like worldwide pop culture. It's staggering how many mediums this man has like dipped his toes in and just changed for the better. There are some things I think about and I think like, wow, if it weren't for Toriyama's existence, some things would just turn out extremely differently. And that's just so many things would be different if he hadn't come into existence and started drawing the things he drew. Not even just Dragon Ball, but like Dr. Slump, Dragon Quest are also things that, again, have had innumerable ripple effects throughout those mediums. It's just, I don't know. I apologize, I'm rambling at this point. I don't even know where to go with this. I just feel so frazzled by this, and I'm still kind of in the middle of grieving, you know, just like everybody else at this point. But I guess I should talk about this episode of the podcast you're going to listen to. This is an episode of the podcast, or I should say that this is a discussion that Lum, Sakaki, Maxi, and I recorded back in 2019. It's technically not our first Patreon bonus podcast that we uploaded, but it is the first one that we recorded specifically for the Patreon to be a bonus podcast. A podcast about That Time I Got Reincarnated as Yamcha by Dragon Garo Lee, which is basically a what-if story where a young Dragon Ball fan dies in a freak accident, is reincarnated as Yamcha in the Dragon Ball world, and basically has to go through the events of the story while playing as Yamcha, I guess. We kind of talk about it throughout the discussion, but That Time I Got Reincarnated as Yamcha is kind of special because it could have easily just been, because obviously if you don't know, Yamcha is a very mimetic character at this point. He's kind of known for being the most pathetic character in all of Dragon Ball. And, you know, it would have been so easy for this to just be a let's shit on Yamcha for like 160 pages or whatever. But it ends up genuinely being like a great celebration of Dragon Ball as a series, to the point where, I guess, slight spoilers, the kid reincarnated as Yamcha bonds over another person reincarnated as another character over Dragon Ball, over their love of this series. And initially, and I might still do this, I'm not sure, probably, but initially I wanted to put up our bonus podcast about Toriyama's 2014 one-shot, Kintoki. Admittedly, a one-shot that Lum, Randy, and I were kind of lukewarm on. I wanted to put it up because it was actually a podcast about us talking about, you know, something actually drawn by Toriyama. And even though we were kind of lukewarm on it at best, it was still something drawn by Toriyama and we still appreciated it on that level. But then I remembered that we recorded a podcast about this series, and it kind of just made more sense to upload a podcast where we kind of, you know, again, bond over this thing that has had such an impact on all of our lives. That's kind of what That Time I Got Reincarnated as Yamcha is about. It is a celebration of Dragon Ball and Toriyama. And honestly, after spending the past day crying on and off and just grieving over the loss of this man whose work meant so much to us, all of us, it just kind of made more sense to me to upload a discussion about a comic that celebrates Dragon Ball, because I kind of think that's what we need the most right now. It's just something that can help us really revel in how amazing Dragon Ball is and how wonderful and amazing its power is to bring people together. And that's kind of what this comic is about, and that's why I wanted to upload this in particular to our main feed, because I wanted to give people something to listen to and help them feel a little better and remind them of why they love Dragon Ball and why it's important and why it brings people together. And I think this series is pretty much the embodiment of that. So I hope that in uploading this, that, you know, you listen to this and you just kind of revel in that feeling of, wow, Dragon Ball's great. This is why it's great. This is why people love it. This is why it's had the impact it has. Honestly, after I get done recording this, I'm probably going to go read it, like, right as soon as I'm done, because I kind of just need to be in that space for a while of just loving Dragon Ball. That's kind of what I need right now, and that's kind of the service I want to offer to other people. Not that I necessarily want to plug a whole lot, because that's not why I'm doing this, but I will say, if you want to listen to more podcasts where we celebrate Toriyama's works, I have recently made a thread on Twitter about the multiple Manga Mavericks podcasts where we talk about Dragon Ball, Dr. Slump, Sandland, his one-shots featured in Akira Toriyama's Manga Theater. I'll probably update that thread here and there because I don't think I'm done really adding to it yet. But again, just to let you guys know, if you want more stuff like this, we have that kind of stuff. There's also Another Day, Another Adventure, where Sakaki and I are currently going through all of the animated Dragon Ball franchise. As inconsistent as that show's release has been, I want to keep doing it, if anything. Toriyama's passing has really kind of lit a fire under me as far as wanting to do that show. I am going to find the time to edit more episodes and record more as soon as I can. I just want it to be said here that as far as that show goes, that no matter how long it takes for us to get out an episode or record an episode, or how much time we spend in between episodes not actually producing the show, as long as either Sakaki or I are around, this show will not die. I will not let it die. I want it to keep going for as long as we live. I never want this show to die out. Like, again, Toriyama's passing has really inspired me to just keep the show going as much as I can, because I want to talk about Dragon Ball for the rest of my life. I genuinely do. It means that much to me, as I'm sure it does with a lot of people. But yeah, point being, we have so many other discussions about Dragon Ball and his works that are out there that you can listen to. You know, I said as much on Twitter. Ever since this news came out, I have been pretty mentally and emotionally checked out. It's hard for me to not think about anything other than this. And if you're in the same place that I am and you don't have a lot going on, just be kind to yourself, treat yourself to some Dragon Ball goodness, listen to this discussion if you're interested, go read some of Toriyama's comics, go watch the Dragon Ball anime, go watch some of the movies, play with your figures, I don't know, just whatever Toriyama or Dragon Ball related activities that make you happy and that will help you feel better in the wake of this just heartbreaking news, just go do it. Treat yourself to some quality Toriyama / Dragon Ball time. You deserve it. I deserve it. We all deserve it. But anyway, I'm sorry. I'm going off on a lot of tangents. Again, I'm very stuck in my feelings right now, and I do apologize for that, but I can't help it. Anyway, I guess I hope you enjoyed this discussion. I had a lot of fun recording it back in the day. Some things we talk about here and there might be a little dated, but I still think it's very much worth listening to, and I do think it still holds up as far as, you know, our collective love of Dragon Ball and Akira Toriyama, and I genuinely hope that you get something out of it. But, I think that's going to be about it for this intro. I don't really know what else to say except tell your loved ones how much you care, let them know how you feel while they're still around, and just from the bottom of my heart, from the deepest pits of my soul, I just want to tell Akira Toriyama, thank you so much for creating innumerable, widely beloved works that have really contributed to pop culture in general. We all miss you. We all love you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. And rest in peace.
awesome and I forgot you. Today, we've got a long-awaited podcast for y'all to listen to. A podcast we've wanted to do for a while, and a manga we wanted to talk about a while. And it's that time I got reincarnated as Yamcha by Dragon Garo Lee. And this was one of the two suggestions on our poll that we put up for our early patrons earlier this month to vote on. And we are doing this now, and then we'll do the other topic on a later month. But for now, I'm really excited to talk about this manga. And with us today, we've got two of our good friends and fan favorite guests on to discuss this manga with us. And that's Maxi Bernard!
Hello!
And Bomber!
Yo!
Oh man, you know, I'm pretty convinced that in another lifetime you were probably a rock star. Cause, boy, you put on one hell of a show.
I don't know. But maybe I will, maybe one day I will fall into an accident and fall down the stairs and I'll wake up in my other life and I will be the lead singer from Kiss or something.
No, that's something I'd read.
Or I'll be the protagonist of, I should be the protagonist of some music manga. Like, I should be the protagonist of Detroit Metal City.
Oh boy.
I think that would fit.
That would be one hell of a read, yeah. That'd be great. Oh boy. I'm glad that we're finally getting around to talking about this, because we've been wanting to talk about this for a while. And we had gone through like so many different like scheduling changes. We wanted to have all kinds of guests on, but unfortunately, a lot of those plans didn't work out. But we're doing it now, and that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm. And luckily, this is a manga that does not require too much preparation for in order to talk about on this podcast, because it's quite short, and you can read it all for free on the Shonen Jump website, courtesy of Wiz Media. Because it is only a three-chapter series, you can read all the chapters on their site. So that is really awesome, and so there's no excuse. If you want to check it out, you can just read it on there.
I will say, though, that I don't think they have the bonus stuff up on the website, so...
They do not.
So, you know, if you want to check those out, I would really suggest buying the volume either, like, physically or digitally. Personally, I think it's worth the price, because I liked a lot of the bonus stuff, personally.
Okay, that's something I have to keep in mind. I only read it on the app, so I didn't get to see the bonuses.
But I guess, normally we, like, you know, go over... you know, the synopsis of whatever we're talking about. But I mean, this is mostly pretty self-explanatory, you know, if you can't tell from the title. But specifically, this is a sort of like Dragon Ball What If, a sort of spin-off manga. And it's about this high school kid who is a huge fan of Dragon Ball, and that's basically his personality trait. And he falls down the stairs trying to get a closer look at some girl's skirt because, you know, high school boys, that's just kind of what you do, I guess. And he falls down the stairs, he dies, and he comes back reincarnated as Yamcha, and he basically uses that as an opportunity to try and survive in the dragon world and basically change the events of the story so that Yamcha doesn't die, you know, in the Saiyan saga, and he actually gets to do things past that. And that's like the basic premise of the manga. But I guess, Lum, do you want to... I know you had some stuff to say about like the production of this manga and whatnot, if you want to go over that real quick.
Sure thing. I think the first thing to talk about is the artist of this manga, Dragon Garo Lee, an Osakan native and a very popular Dragon Ball fan artist, best known for the webcomic doujinshi Dragon Ball Sai, which is a what-if story of what would happen if Vegeta came to Earth instead of Goku, and he was raised by Grandpa Gohan, and he met Bulma and went on the quest for the Dragon Balls. And there are four chapters of Dragon Ball Sai that Dragon Garo Lee has published, and in the first chapter, just to go through a brief rundown of what happens, it's just the origins of Vegeta on Earth, meeting Bulma, foiling Emperor Pilaf. In the second chapter, he condenses Red Ribbon Army and King Piccolo into like one event, basically. Like, Vegeta pretty much destroys the Red Ribbon Army in the first half of the chapter, and then immediately he clowns King Piccolo, and they go on their merry way. Then in the third chapter, it kind of wraps up the Dragon Ball quest for Vegeta and Bulma, and, they encounter Monster Carrot, and then later, I don't know who this character is a reference to or if it's just an OC of Lee, but basically the final boss in this Dragon Ball hunt is this character called Lei Wu, who is basically just some sort of demon, and basically Master Roshi, Krillin, and Yamcha are fighting him. Vegeta kinda is not able to do a whole lot at first because there's like some little goblin on his tail that has kinda depowered him. So he's not able to interfere in time to stop the wish from being made. But then the goblin notices Krillin's head because it likes, shiny things. And so it latches on the Krillin's head. That allows Vegeta to get his full strength back. He clowns the villain. And then he goes off to train with Master Roshi. And then in the fourth chapter, it's basically, Piccolo Jr. has taken over the Earth. And also, something I didn't mention is that in the second chapter, Dr. Gero is introduced, and then he finds Tao Pai Pai, and he rebuilds them as an android. And so in the fourth chapter, Vegeta fights android Tao Pai Pai, who is christened Android 11. And some other fun things that happen is that Mr. Satan challenges Piccolo, a young Mr. Satan, still calling himself Mark, and Kami possesses Mark in the same way that he possesses Shen in the 23rd Budokai. So that's like a fun little thing that happens. And then the chapter ends on a cliffhanger because Dr. Gero goes back to his lab after Tao Pai Pai has been defeated by Vegeta, and he activates Android 10, which is a young Android 17. So, very interesting fan fiction writing, and it's a really fun read. And it's a shame that I guess this is going to be on a permanent hiatus now that Dragon Garo Lee has made the transition to being an official artist for Shueisha and working on Dragon Ball projects for them. But hopefully, maybe they can find a way to make Dragon Ball Sai kind of an official series, because I would like to read more of Lee's take on this what-if concept of what would happen if Vegeta came to Earth and did the Dragon Ball, journey with all of Goku's friends instead of Goku. It's a good read. And one thing to note about Dragon Garo Lee's style is that he's a really talented artist. He's able to mimic the art styles of so many people just so well, and especially getting a classic Dragon Ball feel. His art style in his Dragon Ball works it looks really close to Toriyama's designs, but more accurately, I would say that they're closer to the designs that Minoru Maeda has in the Dragon Ball anime, in terms of his animation style, the way he draws faces, ears, and stuff. And that really does evoke a very classic, early Dragon Ball Z sense of aesthetic, which is so appropriate for, especially a manga like that time as Reincarnated Yamcha that is trying to, kind of hinges its first chapter on the climax of Vegeta fighting against Cybermen and surviving. And Dragon Garo Lee is just also, very notably, is a huge Akira Toriyama fan. If you read his Twitter, if you see what art he posts, you know, it's always, like, fan art of Dragon Ball or Dragon Quest. He's also a big One Punch Man fan, so he also, you know, often draws, like, crossover art with Dragon Ball and One Punch Man characters, but he really is a diehard Dragon Ball fan, and that really comes across through in both Dragon Ball Sai and That Time I Got Reincarnated as Yamcha, where there are a lot of deep cut references to Dragon Ball lore, and also he painstakingly goes out of his way to recreate kind of iconic expressions and even just panel compositions from the original manga. So he is a diehard fan, strew and strew. But the premise of That Time I Got Reincarnated as Yamcha, the genesis of it, did not come from Dragon Garo Lee himself. It came from Shueisha's Dragon Ball Room. So how the idea of That Time I Got Reincarnated as Yamcha came about was revealed by Tsunehiko Nishimaki in a 2017 interview with BuzzFeed Japan, where basically it was explained that the editorial staff at, Shonen Jump Plus were like, we're just one day kind of out drinking, and they started talking about what would it be like if Jump did a reincarnated another world story a la That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime, which the name of That Time I Got Reincarnated as Yamcha is directly derived from, even though the works themselves are not that similar outside of the basic idea of reincarnated in another world, which is basically a very common premise these days. I mean, there's so many anime per season that are about that, but regardless, yeah, so basically they came up with an idea like what would it be like if we did a reincarnated in another world story at Jump? And then they thought about, oh, what would it be like if someone got reincarnated in the Dragon Ball world? And they kind of thought of Yamcha because it would be like the most fun idea that, you know, you take the weakest character in the series, the character that is the most ill-fated and has like kind of the most pathetic circumstances, and we turn the tables and we make him into a more well-treated character. It's just a more interesting premise that way. They also thought about the idea of having Kuririn live in a, Groundhog Day style loop of like he dies and it comes back and has to do things over again. But I think they made a good decision going with Yamcha, because Yamcha, you know, just in popular culture and fandom is kind of treated more like as a joke in a loving way, but he is widely considered the butt of the franchise. But anyway, Toriyama was consulted about the project. He gave his consent. He was shown storyboards. He thought it was funny, but he didn't have too much like involvement in terms of shaping the narrative or anything, outside of saying that, you know, the protagonist, the guy who gets reincarnated as Yamcha, should die in a funny way, which is probably how the idea of him dying falling on the stairs trying to get a peek of a girl's panties came about. And he also outlined the character's personality in terms of like making him a huge Dragon Ball fan like the reader, which I think was also a smart decision. But anyway, they contacted Dragon Ball Lee because, you know, a lot of the editorial staff were fans of his work. They followed him on Twitter. And so, you know, they knew he was also a fan of Yamcha. And so they contacted him on Twitter. And then, like, he agreed to the project and they sent him the outline. And that's how, like, he got involved. And yeah, at some point they found out that Dragon Ball Super was also going to be doing a Yamcha episode, episode 70, the baseball episode. So they timed out the release of the first chapter of the manga to around the same time frame that episode came out, which they timed out very well, because Dragon Ball Super episode 70 came out on December 11, 2016, and the first chapter of That Time I Got Reincarnated as Yamcha came out on December 13th, 2016 on Shonen Jump Plus. Now, originally, this manga was supposed to be published at a much quicker schedule. It was always supposed to be like a mini series, about 3 chapters long. But originally, when the first chapter was published, Dragon Ball release stated that the next chapter would come out the following month. But instead, the second chapter came out on May 7, 2017. And the reason why there's a delay between the first and second chapters is that Dragon Gar Lee's drafts kept getting rejected and revised. Because I guess, Shueisha wasn't totally on board with his ideas. So there was a lot of revisions that had to be done, which is why there's a delay in the second chapter. But the third chapter followed out not too long afterwards, on August 14, 2017, and then the volume came out on November 2nd of that year. And then in March of 2018, at Anime Boston, Viz announced that they acquired it and they would release it. And so about a year after the Japanese volume came out, Viz released the volume on November 6th of last year. And that is, in a nutshell, basically the history of this manga and how we've gotten to this point where we're talking about the official release of a Dragon Ball spin-off comic drawn by a fan artist today, which is something that I would have never expected, because so many other Dragon Ball adjacent manga and spin-offs that have been released in Japan are not brought over here, with the exception of Dragon Ball Super before this, but that is more of a official continuation, of the story. That makes sense to bring over. But yeah, I'm glad that this was brought over. I think a part of the reason it was is because it has such a huge fan response overseas, especially. Like, a lot of people were talking about it. It got picked up for Scanlation very early on by Stacy / Stay With Bash, who now is a translator for Konsenshu. And there was just a lot of enthusiasm behind this idea because in the Dragon Ball fandom worldwide, this idea of Yamcha being the most pathetic character of the series, but also having a love for the character and wanting to see him treated better, live up to the potential that, he started out having when he first introduced in the series. I think that is a very compelling premise, and I think that the manga executes and delivers on the premise very beautifully and succinctly.
Mm-hmm. So, I think it's safe to say that for anybody listening to this, they're very aware of, how much Lum and I absolutely love Dragon Ball, and we've been huge fans of it for a long time. And, they probably have a pretty good idea of what we thought about this series. I think it's safe to assume that we both really enjoyed it and got something out of it. That being said, I'm not as familiar with how Maxi feels about Dragon Ball overall. I can't really say the same about Bomber, because I think I have some sort of idea of where he stands. So we'll maybe get into his thoughts in a little bit, Maxi, if you just want to talk about your involvement with Dragon Ball and how you felt about the spinoff in general.
I did like this. I've been into Dragon Ball since I was a kid or whatever. Like, it aired on TV over here. Like, it's formative for everyone in our sort of age group, really. Like, if you're being serious about it for a second. And I think this is a really interesting way to build upon that. I was really surprised about Dragon Growly and this fan fiction, which I wasn't familiar with, because my main familiarity with them is the big sort of character pieces that have everyone who has swords together, including Yamcha, everyone who's bald, everyone who's a dad, and going from those illustrations to a manga was a huge surprise to me because of that. And I think it's really neat, I've got the English production to hand here, which is utterly brilliant, edited by previous guests on the show, Marlene First, lettered by friend of the show, Annalise Christman. It's absolutely bloody loaded with nice little touches. It's got the lettering style with the old Dragon Ball manga. But then there's a part I get a little stuck on. I won't lie about it. It lifts a bit from the old, and really, if we'll be honest, the still current adaptation of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z that Viz Media put out, which would be great, and I think is a lovely sort of touch to keeping that unity and keeping that verisimilitude of, oh, the story's happening, it's just we're getting extra details to it because suddenly there's this dude inside Yamcha. But the adaptation was by Gerard Jones, convicted and currently jailed pedophile. So there's this part of me that's like, maybe they should have just do their own wholesale translation adaptation without that little connection, you know?
Yeah, but I do think that they really did want to make it accurate to other releases of Dragon Ball that Viz put out, the previous releases, so that, you know, fans could go from reading this manga and then go to the original Dragon Ball manga and see, oh, word for word, this is the same. I know Marlene, in particular, stated that she specifically went out of her way to make sure that the dialogue in Yamcha matched up to the previous versions. So there was a lot of, you know, love and effort put into making it match up. But it is very unfortunate, considering the person who did the translation. And I do hope that one of these days, the entire manga is redone from the ground up, so it doesn't have that baggage anymore. But I think that considering like the intention of what they were trying to do, I actually did appreciate that they went that extra mile to make things match up, to make it like seamless, that you read this, it really does feel like you're transporting the world of the manga, because now if you take a copy of Dragon Ball off the shelf, a copy of the Viz translation, you feel like it's the same scene, and you're seeing it in now when in Dragon Gar Lee's comic, you know, just with you can see how the interactions that the new Yamcha has in that world is changing things, but like also appreciate like the you know.
Yeah, no, I 100% appreciate the effort. I feel like it's really good as an idea, and I think I understand it probably would have been far more expensive and difficult to have taken a massively printed adaptation, because it's not the translation, it's the guy who adapted. They were a comics writer beforehand, and they Viz used to do this more often, like Kelly Sue DeConnick of Bitch Planet fame did all the Black Cat, for example. It probably would have been a massive, massive ball ache for them to have actually completely have changed the translation, although some people, including Zach Davison, have been saying for years, like, they really do need to actually get this stuff changed. And so it's kind of like this thing where you're like, oh, this is great, it connects up. But if they ever actually do get round to changing that translation or adaptation, it won't anymore. So it's like an investment in not changing, you know?
That's a good point.
Yeah, but I guess they just didn't want to think that far ahead. And I, even though I think we would all like them to change the translation, it is also such an effort that I think that they're really waiting for an opportunity to make that, like,
oh, I mean, I don't imagine they're waiting for it for a second. They're not the most eager to go and remove problems. But that's fine. That's business.
I mean, yeah, it's 500 plus chapters. And considering how much work they're doing on weekly simulpubs...
Oh, yeah, although obviously that's a different thing entirely, like... but, yeah, no, that bugbear aside, it's fantastic. I love the goofy use of Comic Sans on the back. Like, that's entertaining as hell. But I'm really impressed by the panels that are actually, like, pretty much wholesale lifted from Dragon Ball. Like, they don't stand out at all compared to Dragon Girl's original art in the comic as well, which I feel like that's the biggest achievement of it, is keeping that fluidity running, but also keeping the real world stuff that bookends the story in a completely different style. Like, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, that's something I really like too. I really like that he didn't just, you know, it wasn't all Dragon Ball. Like, you could tell, I mean, it was done in a way that, you know, wasn't jarring, but you could definitely tell, okay, this is how Dragon Garo Lee normally draws, or not normally, but this is his art style.
It almost feels really natural, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of amazing, really, and it really makes me think, like, I'm not a big, is it said, like, isekai? I'm not into that stuff very much. But, like, I feel like if most of the manga stories that did that had this sort of stylistic shift with the reincarnations, like, I'd be on board with a lot more of them. That's amazing.
I especially do appreciate that the part of the story that is drawn in the quote-unquote real world before the character gets reincarnated, that it does have such a different character design sensibility, different aesthetic to the Dragon Ball portion, because it really does sell the idea that this character has been reincarnated in another world, that he's been reincarnated in the manga world. I feel like the character designs of like in the real world setting, they feel similar to Matsu Kazu Katsura, you know, the look of like his work, or at least his male characters in that work. So I wonder if that is just another intentional nod Lee is throwing there because of Katsura's connection to Toriyama.
I can see that.
I would like hard disagree because Katsura has a much softer style, but like the more I look at the hair, I can kind of believe it. But the faces would throw me off too much from the idea.
But I think what's really great about Lee's art, just in general, is actually, you know, now he's not just a good mimic of, you know, that classic Dragon Ball art style, but he is just a good comic storyteller. Like the comic reads just incredibly well in kind of the same natural way that Toriyama's manga reads. And I really think he makes smart decisions in terms of panel layout and compositions. He never makes the panels too cluttered. Like, all the time, the information displayed in a panel is really easy to read, and it's just not too much for my eye. His sense of timing is really strong in terms of what moments he kind of just allows to breed, the use of speed lines. I just think that in terms of like the way this reads as a comic, it is just really, really well done. And I feel the same way about Dragon Ball Sai, is that it is supremely excellent as a fan comic because it is just as fun to read. It flows at the same kind of pace that Dragon Ball by Akira Toriyama does, and that's something that I feel like a lot of people who are doing derivative Dragon Ball works, even Toyotaro, who does Dragon Ball Super, they can't really match. And Dragon Gar Lee, like, he, I think of all the fan artists who are working on, you know, Dragon Ball spin-off manga and fan mangas, he is the closest to capturing kind of not just the aesthetic, the design sensibilities, but also the comics layout sequencing sensibilities of Toriyama.
It really makes me wish that that he was the one working on Super, the manga version anyway, to be honest, but that's just me.
I really agree. Like, the Super manga has its moments, but just Lee's art is just so much stronger in terms of just like his design sensibilities and his sense of draftsmanship, and also, again, just the way he's able to lay out a page and move the story along is so much cleaner and more fun to read than Toyotaro, who often clutters up the page with too many panels and some very flat sequences and compositions. I was wondering your thoughts on Maxi, on like the way the comic reads, and you know what you felt about that.
I feel like it captures Toriyama's sense of continuity, especially between panels with the action, which is the big thing it had to do. And I think it's got a greater understanding than like you said, than enough of fan artists doing Toriyama-esque things. Like, you'd only have to look at someone's art like Pandora, don't Google them, to understand that just copying the visual style, like the eyes, the faces, the body types, isn't nearly enough to actually replicate Toriyama. But I feel kind of bad because I went off on my little diatribe. We've not actually heard any real opinions from Bomber, so like maybe we'll pass to Bomber.
I was actually just about to ask, because I think out of all of us, I don't want to say this like Bomber is the least fan of Dragon Ball, or that's not even the sentence.
Not just that, but the least fan of Jump, which I think is probably what I find important.
Wow! Like, wow, just calling me out in front of everybody. Okay, sure, fine.
Well, no, because that's what makes me want to know your opinion, because like, don't get me wrong, like, obviously there's Jump stuff you end up digging on. Like, I've enjoyed seeing you dig into bits of Demon Slayer in recent history.
Yes,
but like,
yes.
It's not a normal zone I expect to hear from you. You are, after all, the Sunday person.
Yeah.
So I'd be very interested to see how that affected your viewpoint on it.
Okay, so, I mean, I guess the start of my Dragon Ball history actually was, I watched it as a kid on TV way back in, I want to say early 90s. It used to run on TV, they had like the first 28 episodes. I mean, I'm familiar with Dragon Ball. I mean, I feel like anybody who's in anime and manga, even if they hate Dragon Ball, know what it is. So, I mean, yeah, I'm going to be honest, the last time I even interacted with anything after Goku got married is back when it was on Toonami, so I've only watched Z in completion once. I keep telling myself I should really, like, at least read it, because I've never read the manga for any of it, like, any Dragon Ball. All the Dragon Ball I know is animated. And I've actually, and on top of that, I've never read Super. Watched Super, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess with that being said, I guess what I want to know is, with this manga being something that I think, where the enjoyment of said series sort of hinges on your familiarity with the Dragon Ball franchise, the manga in particular. Do you think you've spent enough time with Dragon Ball to enjoy something like That Time I Got Reincarnated as Yamcha? Or is this something you would have gotten more out of if you have had read Toriyama's original manga?
No, I get what you mean. And you know, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I have more of an appreciation of this just because Sorachi seems to hate Yamcha. So, this feels like something he'd do. Like, to some extent.
I can see that, yeah.
Obviously there'd be more raunchy humor in it somewhere, and, you know, he'd obviously, it wouldn't be, I say hate, but it's obviously more of a mocking kind of respect for him, I guess, so, but yeah, I actually, because of Gintama, like, if I had nothing to do with Gintama either, then maybe I would probably be like, you know, it's okay, but because I know about Gintama and how much it likes to just kind of poke Dragon Ball with a stick. It's like some of the stuff I do get, and of course I've experienced Dragon Ball, I mean, through the anime. So when reading this, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember that too. So on that level, it wasn't a thing where I was like completely like, oh wow, I have no idea what's going on. So again, and I even just recently watched all of Dragon Ball, again, up until Goku, you know, and Chi-Chi got married. So again, I'm familiar with most of it. So on that level, yeah, you know, it was familiarity, and I guess for me, it was reading it on a level of just, you know, pure, I guess, artwork, more so than, okay, I mean, I'm super into Dragon Ball, I mean, I know about it, and you know, I know the events that of which it's referencing, but in the sense of being like, wow, I'm super into Dragon Ball, oh, I love how he just completely, you know, was able to recreate this scene. I didn't have much of that, I guess. Because even Dragon Garo Lee, I know of him too, but not really so much. I mean, I've seen his fan art, but mostly I know of him because of this real, he does artwork of this really, I guess, obscure, and this goes back to Gintama. Wow, I cannot escape Gintama, no matter what I do. It's just, it's always there. But anyway, he does fan art of this TV drama called Yoshihiko the Hero.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've seen that fan art, and I've often retweeted it, and I like Yoshihiko, and how this connects to Gintama is the director of Yoshihiko directed the Gintama live-action movies. In fact, I've even heard at some point that Sorachi was like, if there is going to be a Gintama live-action movie, I want him to do it because of Yoshihiko.
Mm, yeah, in Dragon Ball Sai, the cover pages for those chapters are like crossover fan art of the Dragon Ball Sai version of the Dragon Ball characters and the last Yoshihiko characters in a Dragon Ball S style. So, yeah, I mean, he's a huge fan of that drama
series.
Yeah,
so that's what I know Dragon Ball. I mean, of course I've seen his Dragon Ball work, too, and his Dragon Quest work. And, of course, Yoshihiko itself is kind of like a affectionate parody of Dragon Quest. So, that too.
Well, it's also worth pointing out, and I mean to interrupt, but Dragon Garo Lee, at one point, I think Sugita is in, he plays a character in the Dragon Ball Super Broly movie. I think he plays Lemo. And he drew a bit of fan art of Broly chasing after Gintoki at one point, which I thought was great. So he's even done Gintama fan stuff before. I'd like to see more of that from him personally.
I actually haven't seen that one. I should look for it. But yeah, so I mean, going back to this, it's like, I guess I looked at it more of just like, okay, I'm familiar with these concepts, even if I'm not like super enthusiastic about it. And I can say I agree that from an artistic standpoint, Dragon Garo Lee has got paneling and composition down pat. Like, it was a very smooth read for the three chapters. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to read the bonus stuff, but for the three chapters I read, I never felt like, oh, wow, I don't know what's going on here, or whoa, what is, you know, I never felt lost, and it was very comfortable, you know, and since Lum said, you know, Shueisha went through it and changed, you know, they obviously had issues that they want to keep changing. Unfortunately, there's no way to know where Shueisha begins and Dragon Garo Lee ends, or vice versa. So I'd really like to know, you know, would have loved to be like a fly in the wall to see which, you know, who decided what. Because I did like, I guess we'll probably talk about the events later, but I did like the turn at the end. And I guess the two characters at the end, I'm not too familiar with them either, because again, I haven't really seen Super. But like, again, I really liked how the whole story played out. And again, I would love to know if that was Shueisha saying, hey, you know, you got to use these characters, we want you to use them, or Dragon Garo Lee was just like, oh, well, you know, hey, this would be a fun twist, let me throw them in there too. But yeah, definitely from an artistic standpoint, I could appreciate it. I mean, from a Dragon Ball standpoint, it's weird, because it's like a kind of thing where it's like, I don't hate Dragon Ball by any means at all. Like, and I'm not going to, I wouldn't even say that I'm not enthusiastic about Dragon Ball either. It's just, I guess it's just one of those things where it's like, I know the history and I know how important it is to manga I am enthusiastic about. So I know, you know, even in Sunday, there are artists that are like, yeah, you know, Toriyama, that they were inspired by him, even if they didn't go to Shueisha in the end. So I know how important he is, but I guess from a level of just being like, oh, well, I'm just really hyped into this for a drag. If I'm to be honest, if it weren't for the fact that I was asked to be here, I probably wouldn't have read this. I'm glad I did. Well, don't get me wrong, I actually really enjoyed it, and it might be something that I go, for the extras, I might go track down the I might buy the actual volume, because I really did like it. Because I did like the idea of just, I mean, the Isekai, Dragon Ball Isekai, I mean, that alone is just kind of like, just that sentence alone makes this worth reading, I feel like. So, and he does a good job choosing Yamcha, you know, changing Yamcha's fate by, you know, playing things smartly, and his reasoning for doing it, that was also, it was a fun read. I feel like, even if you're only just barely familiar with the Dragon Ball basics, I still think this is just a fun read, just for how the whole story plot, you know, works itself out.
Well, this might be a weird question, but did you like it enough to where you thought at any point, man, I should probably read more Dragon Ball?
Yes, I mean, I've wanted to read more Dragon Ball in general, because one time, I guess Shueisha was doing a sale on Amazon Japan, and they had like a free random, and I think I tweeted about it, but yeah, they had like a free random volume of Dragon Ball. So, and what volume was it? I think it was when Raditz showed up. So it was like exactly at the point where I've stopped like watching the anime. I think it was around the time Raditz showed up. And like, one thing I could say, you know, whether I'm super into Dragon Ball or not, is that Toriyama really is good at what he does. I mean, it's one thing if Toriyama just made a bunch of characters that are really fun, but wasn't actually a good draftsman. He is. He really is. As much as you'll see it a lot on Twitter that he's lazy and he's just like, he did things to avoid doing more work, but he actually is very good at like setting up a panel and drawing. And that's something even me, as not really a Dragon Ball fan, could appreciate reading that one volume of manga that I did. So yeah, it has been in my mind that, man, I should sit down and read the manga instead of watching it animated, not just because of the, you know, pacing memes, but just because it's like, I just feel like Dragon Ball is a big deal. Whether you love it or hate it, like, I feel like Dragon Ball is kind of like, it's earned its status as being, like, a landmark in, like, shonen manga, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, like, it's undeniable.
Yeah. I feel like even if you, I mean, I've seen it a lot where people, you know, they start reading other things and they get away from shonen, but I'm sure if you asked even, like, some of these other artists that are, like, doing seinen or doing, you know, never done a shonen or they've moved away from shonen, I'm sure most of them will tell you, you know, I read Dragon Ball as a kid, or at least if I didn't read it as a kid, that it influenced me in some way. So I feel like on that note alone, even if I read the Dragon Ball manga and don't really get much out of it other than, you know, hey, it was, had some good artwork and it had some good, you know, paneling and composition, I still feel like because of the legacy it's left, it's still worth reading a couple volumes here or there, even for, unless you're just really like, I can't stand this.
Oh, yeah. But the, like, Dragon Ball, it's, people don't really think about it very much because it very much stayed inside its panels. But it really plays with comic storytelling. Like, the panels would break, there'd be all sorts of clever little touches. And I feel like you don't see that very often, especially in Jump. So, like, it really is kind of unique in that aspect. I mean, the only series since it that isn't a gag manga that's really delved into that is, like, Chainsaw Man lately. And isn't that the wildest thing to think about? It's been, like, 29 years, and I can only think of one other series that's, like, replicated that ability to actually play with the comic form in the biggest magazine in Japan.
Yeah, no, that's really... No, and, I mean, we've discussed this on Twitter too before, but, like, yeah, I'm also not super into Chainsaw Man, but I can admit that, yes, the artwork in that series is really unique. Like, I would definitely... It would be a thing where, I mean, if I had some spare cash, I would just buy Chainsaw Man volumes just to admire the art, even though I don't... The story does nothing for me, but the artwork, I can say, yes. And I agree, it's like, everybody's still, despite being inspired by Dragon Ball, you don't see many people trying to replicate. I don't know if that's, like, out of respect, or just, like, I can't do Toriyama. I can't.
Yeah, you get a lot of people doing the spirit of the idea, like, that sort of shonen action formula, but I think no one tries to be as wildly creative as Toriyama was with, specifically, Dragon Ball, and I guess Dr. Slump before it. Like, he managed to sim things down into a very sort of distinct... short story method after those two series, but man, it's like I feel like describing creative comics as like jazz is probably a massive cliche, but Jesus, it really is kind of like that, just like wildly trying out different ideas, like the whole thing of people going like, oh, Super Saiyan was invented as an idea because he couldn't be bothered to color hair, and you're thinking, yeah, but isn't that kind of amazing?
Yeah,
that
no.
He went like, man, I don't want to color this hair anymore, I need to work out a new way of getting around that problem. Like, that's who does that?
I mean, say what you want, it saves you time, it's efficient.
Oh yeah, but not even the saving of time, it's a creative idea that became a cornerstone of the series, like this amazing transformation into a whole new level of power, and like the motivation behind it was still ultimately, man, I'm tired.
I just want less things to ink.
I mean, you're right, Max. I never thought about it that way. I mean, one of my favorite things to say is sloth is the mother of invention, and there you go. Like, yeah, he just literally right. Just said, yeah, no, that I really like that. Yeah, no, he just was like, I'm tired of drawing here, and so I'm gonna make him more powerful. But then, to make my life easier, I'm going to make him more powerful. That's just, that logic, that's amazing.
That's pretty great.
Ooh, drop my phone there. Oops.
Oh, I thought you just thought that was like such a great statement, like I'll drop the mic for
him. I mean, I'm willing to, that, like I said, just the idea that I'm going to make my life easier by making my main character more powerful. I mean, I guess it's probably happened, but not in that way.
Well, you have a lot of people, when they end up doing the big power-up, they make their life more difficult. I mean, Yu Yu Hakusho, like, when Yusuke Urameshi, like, ends up with, like, the bestial form towards the end, you can see that is a massive ball ache to draw. As Slam Dunk goes on and becomes increasingly more realistic, and everyone is taking the basketball games more and more seriously and passionately, everything becomes more detailed and harder to draw. Like, it's the way it normally goes, and yet Dragon Ball kind of flipped that on its head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue Togashi kind of did it a bit too, like, he was like, Hunter has some great panels, but like, you look at like Yu Yu Hakusho where that was like really consistent, but then you get Hunter where it's like, you know, he has key panels where he's like, okay, this has to look good. And then you have the normal panels where it's like, you'll just, he'll just be like, okay, this panel doesn't matter as much.
Oh yeah, he totally economizes.
Yeah, like, I feel like other manga artists are like, they try to make every panel look amazing, and that's probably why they hurt themselves, but...
Well, that, and you can be kind of super creative with it. A lot of people really dunk on that one chapter at the end of the Chimera Ant Saga, I think it is? It might be a different point, but spoilers for Hunter x Hunter for the next 50 seconds, I don't know, where they go and meet Kite's reincarnation. And like that chapter's like infamously like, oh, they didn't even correct it for the volumes, and the screen tone just covers the entire character instead of like doing certain bits or shading. And it's like, yeah, that's because that looks amazing. Like because yeah. it's so simple, but there's no other chapter of even that comic where corners have had to be cut that looks quite as interesting as that.
Yeah, no, but I definitely agree with you that like this, at least with Dragon Ball in the sense of, and I feel like Dragon Ball Rally has captured that. Because I know reading the manga, just kind of flipping through it, I did, you know, kind of get the feel that I could see this guy just crouched over a Dragon Ball volume and, you know, not just replicating things, but being like, okay, why did Toriyama do it that way?
It feels like he's had to deconstruct the way Toriyama's art actually works to go and do it, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like, as you guys were saying earlier, that like a lot of artists just see it as a picture that I can just kind of copy, and that's a good enough. But I feel like if you're going to have that, if you're going to, you know, emulate somebody else's style, there has to be a sense of, okay, I have to know how it functions, you know, before I can think of, having a box to think out of is great, but you have to actually, you know, take the effort to think outside of it. So... knowing how something works, the parts and everything like that, because, and I guess, you know, with like a guy like Toriyama, everything kind of takes this surface level value type thing, where it's like, everybody, you know, a lot of the criticism of Dragon Ball stuff comes from, of course, how simplistic it is, and I think that because it's that kind of simplistic, people look down on it. Then you get people like Dragon Gaur Lee that I guess, like, more than, you know, of course he's a huge fan, so that's a reason, that's a motivation to do more than just look at a page and recreate it. But I just feel like that I wouldn't, I mean, of course, unless somebody asks him, I don't know, but I feel like there's a sense of, you know, he's a fan of this thing because he's deconstructed Toriyama's approach to page to panel composition and figure out, wow, this guy's done so much. So, you know, he's done a whole lot with very little. And even if his motivation was just, I just don't feel like drawing today, he still did a whole lot.
I mean, Toriyama was an artistic genius. Like, the way he drew so effortlessly, but what his ability to draw his happens to was just so damn good. Like, even though you look at Dragon Ball character designs and you look, oh, these look more cartoony than maybe those of other manga, like the way that they feel in the space, like the three-dimensionality of him, and also just Toriyama's ability to draw just different things, like his ability to make like really amazing mechanical designs, really amazing designs of creatures, of landscapes. Like, Toriyama knew how to pick his battles when it came to like simplifying things, like making background simpler, making character design choices simpler. But like his ability to, that's because he knew how to draw complex things as well. And I think the best artists, like, especially so many artists who are now working in manga or in animation, who grew up with Dragon Ball and fell in love with Dragon Ball, like, they noticed Toriyama's approach to drawing and, like, what he was bringing the drawing. And also they learned not just how to draw, you know, more complex things or draw things a certain way, but they also learn lessons of how to economize, which is very important in comics and animation, where, you know, you don't always have the time to make everything just perfect and ultra detailed. You need to pick your battles, but you can make something look so amazing by doing something very simple.
I feel like the hyper-detailed art has its absolute downsides as well. I mean, you only have to look at people's recent frustrations with Kishimoto's new series, Samurai 8, which is, you know, I love it, But my god, it's full of details and doesn't have any really good tricks to draw the eye or focus you, so you can get lost very easily in it. Like, a simpler art style has its benefits.
I totally agree, and this is kind of... this has been my problem with One Piece for a few years, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oda's art is amazing, you know? He is just an insanely talented artist, and the amount of detail, all the things that he can draw on a weekly basis is just mind-boggling, but I think the manga would be a much more fun read if he simplified a bit, if he didn't feel the need to cram panels with so many characters and things and just so much lines to note things. It can be really hard to read, and I much prefer earlier One Piece, which was kind of more like Dragon Ball in sensibilities in terms of simpler, cleaner panels and character designs.
I mean, it had a really strong Disney aesthetic early on, I find, that really helped the economy of storytelling, especially when if you saw stuff like the giant sea creatures and everything,
yeah.
Which I think definitely helped One Piece. And it does frustrate me a bit now. Have you guys read any, or seen any of, I suppose, Norihiro Yagi's current Shonen Sunday series, Ariadne in the Blue Sky? Because... I feel like this is a perfect example of what would be the mid-ground between these two ideas we're talking about, because it's incredibly detailed, but there's so many tricks for when it needs to be simpler. There'll be a lot of work with light. Characters are almost always silhouetted with a sort of halo glow, which means they stand out against these incredibly dense backgrounds. And like, whilst I still would lean towards the sort of thing Toriyama does, like, there are ways to be more detailed and incredibly readable, but so many authors aren't willing to experiment or try different tricks in that sort of way.
Yeah, I hate to like devolve this into a Sunday thing, so I'm just going to say this real quick. And you shouldn't have invited both of us on here. Did you not learn your lesson from last time? But yeah, no, I mean, it's not exactly the same, but that's part of the reason why, and it kills me so much that it's not selling well. That's why I love Ryoko, also in Sunday.
Yeah.
Also, I love that Mitsuhashi Kaito. He's got this sensibility of just like, he'll have four pages that are just double page spreads. And there's a focal point, there's a background and everything. And of course, like, after his hiatus, I thought that he'd like, kind of, you know, calm down a bit, but he just keeps ramping it up even more. That's why it's killing me. It doesn't sell that well.
I wish it could stay in the top 500 when a new volume comes out for more than like 5 minutes. It would be really great. And that connects well to One Piece even, because they early One Piece and current Ryoko both do really similar tricks with perspective on the action that just draws you in and makes you focus on what matters, like with legs disappearing into the vanishing points, massively bending arms with the sword play and stuff. Like, I'm actually doing gestures because I'm so excited about this. I don't know why. No one's looking at me. But yeah, I think things like that, things like early One Piece, like Ryoko, like Ariadne, like, or whatnot, like, they're things that I feel like build on the sort of Toriyama, Dragon Ball era legacy really well, whether intentionally or otherwise. They're the sort of things I look at and go and say, they've seen classic shonen in action and thought about how important clarity and readability is.
Yeah, exactly. That sums it up really well. I feel like there are, I mean, I'm not saying this of every artist, you know, I do feel like there are some that look at how they look at the surface level of just, this looks cool, I want to do that too. And then there are some that break it down and are like, okay, like, why did they approach it this way? Why does that work that way? Or, you know, even if they at the end don't really understand what the artist was doing, you know, that thought of, okay, I'm going to break down the page and figure out what about this attracted me to my eye to this page and why does it work that way? I mean, I would imagine, like, you're going back to Sunday again, you know, with a guy like Fujita in there, like,
yeah, right.
He's another one that's just like, I don't know how he does what he does on a weekly basis. And after watching his Man Ban episode, I'm still confused. I'm still, How do you exist?
So yeah, I guess before this cut becomes another episode of the Sunday podcast. So I do want to go back to Yamcha for at least a little bit here. I don't know, Lum, if you had anything else you wanted to bring up, but I was personally interested in how when I was reading this series in particular, it kind of brought me back to my days when, cause I'm not sure if I brought it up on the Dragon Ball Super podcast we did a while back, but, I didn't watch Z to completion back in the day. Cause I think around the Boost stuff, I think that's when I, for some reason, stopped watching. I don't know if I just stopped watching Cartoon Network a lot back then. Basically, up until I read the manga, like, all the way through, like, from the very beginning of Dragon Ball proper, I got most of, like, I basically got all of the story through a combination of, I watched enough of it back on Toonami, through the video games, and then through the, the Ultimate Uncut versions of the Saiyan saga that they would later air on Cartoon Network in like 2005 or something. So I didn't actually get a complete sense of the story until I like properly read the manga, like, God, back in like 2010, 2011. But my point is, I would get a lot of the story through the games, and through the games, the video games, like, especially like the Tenkaichi games or the Sparking games, as they're known in Japan, would always have these kind of like what if stories. And that's kind of like what this reminded me of. Like, it brought me back to the days where I would play, I think it was Tenkaichi 3, I could be wrong. And, you know, I would get certain like, playable what if stories, like, you know, hey, what if Raditz became good and was a part of the good guy team or whatever? And, you know, I really liked stuff like that. So I was wondering, you know, if we were to get more sort of what if Dragon Ball scenarios like this from Dragon Garo Lee, you know, what would you guys be interested in?
Shit, I want to get to that question in a second, but I just have to go and like go down a similar like talk about the video games route here, because this deliberately ties into, I think, the phone game Dog and Battle, and also the 3DS Fusion game. But this is in the bonus material, Bomb, by the way, the Fusion thing. But that in turn reminded me of one of the things in the game's what if sort of scenarios that really, really hit with me, which was Budokai 2, you could make Yamcha and Tien fuse into Tiensha.
Oh my god, yeah, that was the best.
And like, that's definitely down the sort of route I love. And I think, to actually answer the question, that's a sort of what if scenario I would really like, and probably why I should actually get around to trying out that 3DS game, is fusions are the most exciting part of Dragon Ball to me. They tickle that little bit at the back of my brain that just wants to be a kid again, because you're just mashing up characters, essentially making your own OCs by just going, oh yeah, it's just this and this together as one.
I mean, yeah, I guess I should have touched on that too. Like, I really like that little bit. I think it's the very last bonus story at the end of the volume. I don't want to necessarily give it away, but it's there are a fusion between two characters, and it's pretty great.
I mean, great's a strong word. It might be traumatic.
I mean, great in the worst possible way, I should say. Oh man. But no, yeah. I don't know if this is kind of cheating, but I guess to answer my own question, I haven't played Tenkaichi 3 in a long time, so I don't remember how the story played out. But I'm sure if I like went back to it, back to that what if story with Raditz, I'm sure it probably wouldn't be like, you know, the best, because I think the whole thing hinges on him like getting hit on the head and having amnesia and him not remembering who he is or whatever. And that, and personally, I don't really care for amnesia stories.
But I mean, the entirety of Dragon Ball is an amnesia story, Colson.
That is true.
Damn it, you're right. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, I would love to see another take on that story, because Raditz in particular, like, he's kind of another sort of joke character where it's like, you know, he, like, at the time, he's supposed to be this really large looming threat, and he's Goku's brother and everything, and or whatever, but, you know, compared to Vegeta and Nappa later, he's kind of nothing. And he basically serves his purpose in and is just gone as soon as he's introduced, almost. But, like, I don't know. So something about that's always, something about that, like, what if scenario has always interested me. I would like to see Dragon Garo Lee's, like, take on that, maybe.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, come on, how great would it be if they just did, like, a storyline where Raditz was brought back using the Dragon Balls, like, after that saga, and the unconditional love of his brother brought him round as, like, a Vegeta-style anti-hero, but one who has that sort of, that lack of strength that has to be built up. That would be beautiful.
That would be nice. That would be beautiful. I would love that. Now I'm totally into this, like, AU where, like, Goku and Raditz are just really good brothers, and they love each other, and I love it. Thanks, Maxie.
Well, this is what fanfiction's for. Well, that or writing a story about Broly's secret son, Umbra, who then gets trained by Yamcha to be a good hero. Which is my actual fanfiction history. Wow. That's right. I loved Yamcha all along. He was the deuteragonist in my shitty story.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
We gotta share that with the world.
Oh, my
Post
God.
Post it online.
Oh, man.
Boy. Anybody else have any other ideas?
It's hard for me to say, because I'm like, you guys are like, really, I won't say really into Dragon Ball, but I mean more so than me, so it's kind of like, I don't know what I can contribute here.
Go for a comedic answer, like, what sort of Dragon Ball story would you like? I'd love it if Goku became a kid again, like in Dragon Ball GT, but this time he has to actually work together with a grown-up detective to solve mysteries in a way that doesn't give away
there.
Who he really
he
is.
I was asking myself, is he gonna go there? Is he gonna go there? He went there.
And then Dragon Ball becomes a Shonen Sunday title, and Shonen Sunday is saved.
That's how you do it.
No, and it'll go on for 25 years, and he still wouldn't have aged today.
I mean, and you know, the funny thing about it is, Aoyama's first series before Konan, Yaiba, was somewhat based off Dragon Ball. It was like saying, hey, if I were to do Dragon Ball, this is what it'd be like. That's Yaiba, essentially. It's Dragon Ball with more swords.
I could see that, honestly.
It was like based off of some old yokai movie and Dragon Ball. That's Yaiba. That's what it is. So,
well, that just makes me want to read Yaiba even more.
Oh, hold on. I've got another what if scenario. Okay, uh-huh. So it's literally just food wars, but all the food is judged by Yajirobe.
and that is clothes explode.
Of course, who doesn't want to see that? He's a delightful round boy.
That's awesome.
I mean, I want that so bad.
I do too. And I, oh man,
yeah, you know, Yajirobe doesn't. Aside from that one moment in the Saiyan arc, he doesn't really get a lot of time to shine.
No, Yajirobe is very quickly made irrelevant.
He was like introduced as crazy overstrong as well, like, and that lasted a volume.
He could take out a dinosaur.
Yeah.
That's so
he
badass.
Could take out a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that actually makes me a little mad.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that I remember because you know OG Dragon Ball is my thing, but like, yeah, that made me kind of mad. He was kind of cool and everything, and he had like, and now you know afterwards he's got like Luffy's voice actress, so he sounds just like Luffy too. So it's like, that got me so mad when I watched it again recently. I was like, he could have been awesome, and
you get the impression that Toriyama liked Yajirobe far more than his readers did.
Hey, there you go. That time I got reincarnated as Yajirobe.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I think the problem with Yajirobe was just the dynamic he had with Goku was too similar to that with Kuririn. And I think that it's kind of exacerbated by the fact that Mayumi Tanaka voices both Kuririn and Yamcha. I mean Yajirobe.
Yeah, you gotta, you know, he was basically there to serve the plot, and once he was done, then it was like, yeah, I mean, like Goku needed a dude to kind of hang out with while, you know, he got his bearings straight. And once that was finished, then yeah, Yajirobe was like, and it sucks because I like him a lot, actually.
See, now I'm just imagining. Now I'm just imagining how the story would play out in my head, and I wanted to get to a point where, like, whoever's reincarnated as Yajirobe just becomes, like, super buff.
Oh my god!
But like his like round head is still the same, just like on a buff body.
Well, he could be like fat buff. Fat buff's great.
Oh man. But no, yeah, I guess something else I thought was really interesting, because it might be worth it to kind of talk about, like, I don't know, I feel like we have to talk about this a little bit, considering, you know, the series is about Yamcha. So something that's always interested me is that, like, I don't know, I just find it really interesting that Yamcha has, like, this sort of, like, mimetic, like, cult following at this point, almost. It's, I don't know, I just find it really interesting, because we're at a point now where, like, people are willing to buy figures of a dead Yamcha, myself included.
What?
Yeah, have you never seen this?
No, you said, have you actually bought it, though?
No, I haven't, but I want it.
Okay, cool, willing and buying it are different things. Okay, cool. You're
No, trust me. Look, if I had more disposable income, I would buy it for sure, and I would keep it on my desk. But yeah, no, I don't know. Something I really found interesting about this manga is that, like, this could have easily been just let's shit all over Yamcha the entire time.
I mean, but if you wanted that, you just go read Gintama. I mean, why do that twice? No, I'm kidding. But yeah, no, I get what you're getting at. That, like, it's weird that Yamcha's like, he's like almost a breakout character, but not really.
like that's something I wish we could explore a little bit. Is like, why do we like Yamcha? Like, why are we so, like, endeared to him?
Everybody loves a loser.
Because he is the most pathetic character in Dragon Ball, because he, after the first arc, he loses in the first round of every tournament. He only wins against the Invisible Man because Kuririn has Master Roshi bleed all over him.
Gross.
And then he loses very easily to the Mummy. His relationship with Bulma is on the rocks very quickly, and he gets dumped by her, and she hooks up with the guy who basically is responsible for his death. And then Toriyama actively sabotages his character by saying that he cheats on Bulma, and that has Bulma, like, chew him out and call him a loser and stuff. So he's really made to be, like, this pathetic and likable character. And Mr. Fusion of the Dragon Ball The Section series on YouTube did a great, like, analysis of how Toriyama kind of screwed up Yamcha's character and kind of turned him into the joke that the fandom now knows him as. Like I mentioned before, kind of sabotaging his character for the sake of the story. Like, Yamcha just became a convenient character to sacrifice in the story to set up other characters and other plot points. Like, literally, the reason he loses in the first round of every tournament is to set up, like, a character who would be important in that tournament. In the first two tournaments, it was Goku's eventual final round opponent. And then in the third tournament, it's Shen, who is Kami. And then that is, like, the most humiliating fight for Yamcha by far. And eventually, like, it just got to a point, like, the reason, like, Yamcha was losing all the time, like, the narrative purpose of that was, again, like, he was just the job to establish that the antagonist was a big threat. But because it happened just so frequently, that didn't even register anymore, because it wasn't believable, because no one could by that Yamcha was actually strong. He had no credibility. So basically, as after the Cell arc, Toriyama retires Yamcha, and just the entire character arc of Yamcha, of him being established as this total badass from the beginning, and then by the end of the series being someone so lame that in anime filler, he is so lame that he won't even dive into the ocean to dig up a Dragon Ball, so Chi-Chi and Bulma do it instead. The fact that his character degrades so much over the course of the series is kind of why he's such a meme, because he is, like, the Dragon Ball character that takes the greatest fall from grace out of all of them. Because, like, as the story goes on, so many of the OG Dragon Ball casts fall into irrelevance or uselessness. But Yamcha is the shining example of someone who just never even gets a chance to live up to his potential. Never even, by the end of the series, is not even treated with respect or any dignity. Like, Ten Shinhan is also quickly made irrelevant, but he's always treated with dignity and respect by other
characters. He's always given that moment where he gets to be impressive. Like, he had the whole thing in Cell Saga of, like, pinning down Cell's second stage rages. And then, like, even in the Buu Saga, like, he's there and he's relevant. Like, it's a really sort of neat moment.
Yeah, he saves Gohan's life for a hot second. I mean,
That Yamcha never gets that. Yamcha just... The only thing Yamcha has of note that isn't just a dunk on him is being the only remotely tolerable character in the Hollywood Dragon Ball film.
I mean, honestly, out of everybody in that really shitty movie, he was the most like the character he was supposed to portray, so.
Oh, yeah, in that he was kind of a sleazebag.
Oh, my God.
Have you heard that Shueisha, like, actually given a statement about that Dragon Ball film recently, actually?
Yeah, Kazuhiko Torishima did an interview and basically said, he was asked, what was your opinion of the Dragon Ball film? And Torishima said, you know, I really wish that we had fronted the $45 million to have a say in the production of the film, so we could have had veto rights on some of their ideas.
Could have just killed the whole script.
He said basically that if they were to try it again, like, he would have pushed for that. Or, like, if he had known what he knows now of how the film would turn out, he would have pushed for that. But the reason why they couldn't go for it, because that would be 75% of Shueisha's yearly income.
Well, wouldn't it?
That's expensive. Wow. So.
I didn't know that. That's actually really interesting. But no, yeah. I was trying to mention earlier that I really do like how this thing isn't just like, let's just dunk on Yamcha the whole time. Like, there's a legitimate effort to, like, to give him some sort of relevancy and to help him, like, there's a love for the character, and, like, not just for the character, but a love for the franchise that you really see by the end. And it's surprisingly wholesome in that way, and I really appreciate that.
It's really sincere. Like, it at no point does it feel like it's cynical or goofing on it, even when, like, the big crux of the story, like, for taking out another character is, oh, I'll trip them up with Dragon Ball trivia. Like, it still fits that particular character and still feels really, really heartfelt and loving towards the fan base, I guess, which they totally could have gone the other way. It could have been this terrible cynical thing that just played off on the joke of, oh, Yamcha, isn't he shit? And, like, and that would have sucked. Mm-hmm. But it's so meticulously crafted, which I think part of that is because of things like what Sid was saying earlier of bailing on multiple drafts of the second chapter. I think because it had to be just right. And I feel like that's my description for Dragon Ball that time I got reincarnated as a Yamcha. It's just right.
It's weird because, like, now that I think about it, like, this is a more loving tribute to Yamcha and Dragon Ball than, like... And I mean, as much as I love the baseball episode of Super, like, there were parts of that, I have to admit, that were kind of hard to watch because it's like, you know... Like, they have to get Yamcha in the I'm dead pose or whatever by the end. And it's like,
I mean, that whole episode is just dunking on Yamcha. He gets horribly hurt in slapstick ways. Like, the jokes on that episode are all at his expense. It's like, in Super, it really becomes apparent that, yeah, no, it was already apparent in Dragon Ball Z filler that the way that the writers saw Yamcha and the fans saw Yamcha was as this joke character, but Super kind of hammers that home even more with that baseball episode and the subplot of Yamcha thinking he's going to be invited as the 10th member of the team, but the character is never even once considering him.
God, that's so hard to watch.
And it's made worse by the fact that Yamcha says he wants to be a member of the team, but it's so obvious that he actually is hoping that they don't ask him so he can bow out because he's actually afraid. Again, it's a joke at the expense that he's actually, that he talks up this game, but he's actually a really pathetic person. And what's great about the time he got reincarnated as Yamcha is that there are no jokes at Yamcha's expense. Like, it is a challenge for the protagonist to be reincarnated as Yamcha because Yamcha has so much bad stuff happen to him. But it is a loving tribute to everything Dragon Ball, and it is an earnest exploration of how to make Yamcha's character survive, prosper, and be happy in the Dragon Ball world if he had the knowledge that a Dragon Ball fan has of the entire series and can exploit opportunities to allow him to get stronger so he never has to die and he never has to suffer any form of humiliation. And I really appreciated that about it. It is an earnest love letter to the series.
Yeah, like, it could have been so easy for this to turn out to be, like, some kind of, like, cynical marketing thing or something, but, like, it ended up being a lot more enjoyable than, like, I expected it to be, so I appreciate that.
I wish it was cheaper than normal retail price for a volume. I don't know why this just popped into my head as a Yamcha thought, but it's like, it's still $10 for 60 less pages.
Yeah. I do wish it was a little cheaper, but I don't know, at the very least, it's you know, it's being sold cheaper digitally at least, which is good.
Oh yeah, like I can definitely admire that. And again, you can read all the non-bonus content stuff. You can read like the main free chapter thing for free. That's fine.
Which I think is good considering, if I remember correctly, I think it was posted for free on Jump Plus in the first place anyway. So.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, it might even actually still be up for free on Jump Plus. They don't take down as much as you'd think. They just kind of hide it away on the site a bit. And I mean, trying to navigate the Shonen Jump Plus website, that's fun in its own way. So.
But I think we're probably getting ready to kind of round off here pretty soon, unless there's anything you guys want to bring up like really quickly before we head out.
I think it was very smart to have the antagonist character turn out to be Chiaotzu, because if there's one character besides Yamcha who gets shafted the most, it's Chiaotzu, who literally has no accomplishments to speak of throughout the entire series, and in the manga never actually has a conversation with Goku at all. Those characters never actually interact, even if they're in the same panel.
And he can't
together.
Math. Which I admire, which I identify with. So I and Chiaotzu have a lot in common. Math evades us.
and see, I want to give him credit for trying to like sacrifice himself against Nappa, but even then, like, you know, that doesn't end up working
they
out.
They actually made a backpack of that scene, and I love the fact that that exists. Even
That's,
if it's
that
awful.
Is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, like if I hated myself a little more, I would definitely own that backpack, right?
I want that backpack too,
even though I know it's awful.
What is up with Dragon Ball and making merchandise of the most morbid moments in the series? Can we just take a moment to like appreciate that?
Yeah, it's pretty great. I mean, it's just because they happen to be so iconic and recognizable that, like, yeah, people want that. It's not morbid, it's just kind of charming. Oh, Chiaotzu blew himself up to fight Nappa. That was a moment. That's amusing in hindsight because of how useless he is.
We'll make a backpack for your kids to wear.
Can you imagine some Dragon Ball fan getting your kid this thing and then their kid's never seen Dragon Ball? Then maybe one day they watch it. They're like, this is where my box hat came from, Dad? This?
if they can make merchandise out of the moment where, like, Frieza stabs Krillin through the stomach with his horn, they would.
They probably
I'm surprised they haven't made that already.
I'm sure there's a figure of it, maybe, or if not, I'm sure they're going to come up with one eventually.
I mean, it's just like,
oh, it's going to happen.
I guess it's just the fact that all of these no sales are just so iconic, because that's usually what they are. It's just a no sale to some villain.
Oh my god. Dragon Ball's good.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And I clearly need to read the manga, so. I need to read the manga so I can understand all these iconic no sales.
I think this has been a pretty good show, though.
I'm surprised how much we managed to actually get out both on the subject matter and around the subject matter. Not to toot our own horn, guys. It's a good episode.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's gonna be about it. I really enjoyed talking about that time I got reincarnated as Yamcha, and, you know, for anyone listening, you know, we mentioned it before, but, it is available for free on the Shonen Jump app and website. You don't even need a subscription for that. If you want the bonus content, the actual volume is available physically and digitally wherever comics are sold. I still haven't gotten my physical copy of it. I really want to own this physically. But yeah, if you think the physical volume anyway is a little expensive for how much it actually has, you know, like Maxi mentioned earlier, and you want to save a little bit of money, you know, just buy it digitally. It's only about $6 or $7 or so. That's how I bought it anyway. I think it's really worth it if you are a fan of Dragon Ball, or even if you're only aware of like the memes. Yes. if you're aware of the Yamcha memes, then maybe you'll still get something out of it. But no, yeah, I think this gets a full recommendation from all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
All right. Cool. But I guess before we head out of here, thank you, Maxi and Bomber, for coming on and joining us.
Hey, no problem. Anytime.
It's always a pleasure.
I guess we'll let you guys plug your stuff. I don't know. Maxi, I know you're not really doing anything lately, but do you have anything you want to put out there at all?
I don't really do anything crazy on the internet at the moment. I'm in the middle of a collaborative project with another person. It'll be releasing in November. It's a baby. Haha, that was clever, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, congratulations on that, actually.
Yeah, congrats. That's one way to introduce that. I like that.
I think it's a fun thing.
I feel like such an idiot. I saw you tweet about that, and I legitimately thought, oh, they had a... That's a weird card. It didn't click with me that, oh, they're actually having a child.
Yeah. But in all seriousness, so I still regularly tweet about manga over on MaxiTheB on Twitter, which is great because, by and large, if I'm tweeting about a manga and it's not, like, from Shonen Sunday, you can guarantee they'll announce a drama for it at some point, which is the best superpower to have. it keeps happening. Beyond that... there is still technically stuff being worked on now and then. Like I refuse to commit to naming a project or saying that I'm going to do a thing. It's just doing stuff in the background, and maybe I'll put it out on my website, friendshipeffortvictory.com at some point. Maybe I won't, but it's just, you know, just a way to kill time sometimes. So maybe that'll happen. Maybe it won't. Who knows? What is it? Who knows?
Well, Maxi, I think I speak for all of us when I say that, you know, whatever you're working on, we're always looking forward to when it comes out. So
yeah, I just wish I could actually follow through on releasing stuff more often, which is why I've officially quote unquote quit doing things, because if I'm not saying I'm doing a thing, I'm not letting anyone down.
I mean that's fair.
Yeah, no, that is. I mean, you gotta put yourself number one first, and if you're not in a good place, then you can't put out anything, so...
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, I'm just really bad at making stuff. I'm in an okay place right now. I have a busy work life, and the second I commit to doing something, I don't, so...
Bomber, what about you? I know you have a lot of stuff you probably want to plug. Yeah,
probably far too much at this point. I need to take a page from Maxi and stop doing things. But yeah, I've got, of course, the blog, WSS Talkback, www.blogspot.com, and I talk about Shonen Sunday all the time there. Probably significantly less than I used to, and the reason for that is because now I've moved a lot of my activity to Twitter, at, you know, at WSS Talkback. And I, again, all the Shonen Sunday stuff is there. I'm talking about news, my impressions, all of that stuff. And I'm actually really happy to say that Twitter is, like, kind of taking off. I got followed by Shun Matsuena the other day. So, and I was freaking out about that. And one of the editors from Sunday, like, liked one of my posts. So it's been, the Twitter's been really great in that regard.
I mean, things keep going at this pace, you will just become the new publisher for Shonen Sunday.
I guess.
This is how you do it. You climb your way up.
If I could be less shy and start talking to some of these people, I probably might end up being invited to an event or something.
At this rate, you will basically own Shogakukan. Essentially.
I mean, probably.
Hey, and if you own Shogakukan, you own half of Shueisha, and then you get to control Jump.
Ooh.
Isn't that what matters?
And with a single snap. But yeah, that's a lot of what I'm doing. I mean, I guess, spoiler, and I really probably shouldn't say this, but, I mean, I'm also, speaking of Viz, you know, their whole initiative of, you know, supporting people who want to get in to making stuff, I'm trying to do that too. So, ooh, hopefully when I head over to NAI Expo, I have a portfolio to give them.
Ooh, yeah, you'll have to update us on that.
Well, I couldn't think of anyone more deserving to be chasing that.
Yeah, so thank you. I mean, that's another thing that's stressing me out too. It's doing that as well. So, and keeping up with the Sunday, and it's a lot of stuff. But I mean, it's fun.
Well, to definitely go support Bomber's work. We really appreciate his work. You know, on the Talkback blog and on Twitter and everything. So, but no, yeah, I guess Lum, do you want to plug your stuff?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at LumRomiyasha on a variety of places like Animation Revelation and Anylist by that name. Wherever there's a LumRomiyasha, that's where you can find me. You can also read my reviews and my other podcast, Lum Squad, a Yuri Yatsura podcast that I do with AC every month, just talking about Yuri Yatsura. Second episode should be out by the time you're listening to this. But, well, we'll see about that. It's coming soon, because it's been recorded, and it'll be out. And then we'll be scheduling the third episode and releasing that next month, so look forward to that. But if you want to read some of my reviews, I probably have a few in the works, but you can check out my review of that time I got reincarnated as a Yamcha that I wrote when the manga came out last year. So you can check that out. Probably will leave a link in the description on Patreon. But, yeah, that's where you can find more of my stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then as for me, I'm Colton. You can find me on Twitter at SniperKing323. I host a few other podcasts such as Life Lessons, the Gintama Manga Cast. So if you're a fan of Gintama, please go check that out. We're on a bit of a hiatus at the moment, but you know, we have a huge backlog of episodes that you can listen to over at GintaLifeLessons.wordpress.com. I also host One Podcast Prevails, a Detective Conan / Case Closed podcast with my good friend Doctor from the Ask Backwards Anime podcast. You can find that at onepodcastprevails.com. And then normally this would be the part of the show where like we go over, you know, where you can find like all comic and the podcast and everything. But, you know, if you're listening to this, you know, you're already a patron. And, you know, you already support the podcast, and I'm going to assume that, you know where to find all of our stuff. I mean, you're a patron of ours, you know, you probably know all that stuff already. So, but, you know, if we happen to unlock this episode at any point in the near future, I'll probably cut in here and, you know, put in all that info. But, I think for now, you know, thank you guys so much for supporting the podcast. We really appreciate all of your patronage. Look forward to next month's bonus pod, and I think we're gonna sign off for now, so we'll see you guys later.
See ya.
Sayonara.
Arrivederci.